Business is simple. It's just not easy. We focus on three things to help you run and grow your business more easily: talent, sales, and how to scale. Can it be that simple? Talent. Develop a robust recruiting, vetting, and training process to help capable people and then help them to become who and what they want to be. Sales. Have a logical go-to-market strategy. Build the sales and marketing structure and plan around it, and then attack and execute the plan with fanatical consistency. Scale. Know where you're going, why you're going. Share with others why they would want to join you. Be clear on who's allowed to join you and what they'll need to do to stay on board. Anticipate roadblocks. Avoid them before you get stuck. And then when you do hit one, and you will, stay calm, problem solve, and find resources to get unstuck. Sounds simple, right? Simple to understand, but not easy to do. Join us as we focus on the tips and tricks and hacks for running a profitable, hyper-growth business. We'll share real-world horror stories and celebrate the victory sagas that will inspire you. This is the Talent, Sales, and Scale Show.
Hey everyone, Brian Whittington with this episode of the Talent, Sales, and Scale Show. So today we have Andrea Flack Weatherald of And Beyond. So this should be fairly interesting. So the reason I asked Andrea to be on is I took improv a while back because I'm too flat-footed and I couldn't adapt in a sales conversation quite enough. So Andrea and I had a couple of conversations. And so the topic for today that we're going to be handling is how in the world do we take and leverage the ideas of improv and then help that to eliminate the clash between sales and the delivery of the brand promise, or the customer success with that brand promise, where the salespeople, they never do this, but some people say that they overpromise and, you know, make customer success people have some grief, but that never happens, does it, Andrea?
Oh no, that never happens. And the customer success and delivery people, they're never sticks in the mud.
It's all good in the hood. So welcome, Andrea. So glad to have you on board with us today.
Thanks so much for having me. I've been looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. All right. So let's jump right into this. I mean, improv, business, sales, customer success, you do leadership and culture stuff. I mean, what makes you an expert on this? You're in improv, for goodness sakes.
Yeah. So one of the things that I think is delightful about improv is that it's actually just a really approachable, really effective content learning system. Like, improv makes it easy to learn things that are really important and really, really applicable. And so my background is in addiction and smoking cessation behavior modification coaching. So that's a lot of words all in a row. So I'm a social worker. That's what my degree is in. That's what my licenses in is in social work. And when I was first done with school, my first foray into the adult world of work was doing behavior modification coaching on a research study that was here in Pittsburgh, looking specifically at addiction and smoking cessation. But what I learned during that time of, you know, like working with scientists, you know, on the medical end, but also like learning from social scientists who have studied ways that people change, like what's happening in your brain when you attempt to make a change. Those things that I learned about how people can make effective changes that last over the long run, you're not just changing to appease somebody, to get your boss or a judge or your wife or your doctor or whoever off your back. You're changing because you have tapped into your own internal motivation. You've tapped into your internal understanding of what you want, what your purpose is, and you've understood that this change is in alignment with your best interests. So this framework of how do we help people do that is powerfully transformational in the leadership and HR space as well. And delightfully enough, improv is a really fun way to learn those skills, because a lot of the same skills that it takes to lead effectively, to change effectively, to grow and be the leader that you intend to be on a consistent basis, those skills are happening in improv. And so it's a real-time way and a fun way to do something that can absolutely change your life. is it helpful to give examples of how improv does that? Or is it like maybe immediately obvious to you and all of your viewers why improv is such a powerful mechanism for learning this content?
Yeah, not even close, because I was not expecting that answer. So, geez Louise. Yeah, so let's unpack that. So first, a learning system? It's improv, for goodness sakes. How is it a learning system?
Yeah, so I have built some backbone around it to help it be a system. It's on its own, it's still a great learning method, but what makes it a system is kind of the infrastructure that I've put in place alongside it, to be clear on that use of the word system.
Okay.
But as a method, improv, you know, they say there are no rules, but really there's a ton, because what you're being asked to do is stay present in this moment. That's mindfulness. Stay present in this moment and choose curiosity instead of judgment. Stay present in this moment and listen actively to what's happening around you, because if you're not listening, you can't add anything. If you're not listening, you can't contribute. You haven't earned the right to and if you haven't yesed. So, you know, the foundation of improv is this idea of yes and. And when I teach it in my corporate work, I teach this as humility and courage, because yes and tends to make people kind of glaze over with this like, ugh, we can't say yes to everything. That's the whole point of our clash. You know, we can't say yes to everything. But really what we're talking about is equal parts humility and courage, humility and courage. And it's this dance that we do in improv of listening, valuing others' contributions, you know, being open to getting surprised by your scene partner in a delightful way, albeit unexpected. But at the same time, realizing it's not enough to just like listen and observe what's going on everywhere else. At some point, you have to summon the courage to contribute your own perspective and your own input. Otherwise, you're in the audience. You know, if you're improvising, if you're participating, you have to have that equal measure of adding your own perspective. And it's that dance, listen, build, listen, build. If that sounds like agile development to any of your listeners, it's because that's also agile development is very similar in spirit to that yes, and humility, courage, humility, courage. So in real time, in improv, these skills that make software work for users, these skills that make teams produce effectively, that help people engage conversations about racial justice at work and diversity, equity, and inclusion, those same skills, it's vulnerability, it's courage, it's listening, it's present focus, it's sacrificial support of your scene partners. I could preach on this all day, but those same skills are present in improv.
So that's really interesting. So I jotted down a couple of high level. So we call it being present. You know, the buzzword in the business community is that mindfulness, right? We have to be mindful. What is just showing up and being present? Active listening is a part of that. So we can repeat back. And then it seems like curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And curiosity, correct me if I'm wrong, but that curiosity is that open-mindedness, that respect, valuing of others. You brought up value, but value is really the respect of others. Mm-hmm. That you and really what you didn't say, I don't think you did, is this is really based on trust then.
Oh, yes. It all comes down to trust. It all comes down to trust.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because, and the reason I was thinking of that is if I'm going to have courage, or I always reference back Kim Scott's, I love her book, Radical Candor, right? Really mm-hmm. gets to, can you challenge somebody in a caring way?
Yeah.
Right? Be confrontational, I've heard it put as well. Mm-hmm. And so that courage, that radical candor to get out there, yet be humble enough to open up to others. So it's just really human relationship skills is what you're talking about.
Oh, absolutely. And that trust factor is obviously critical for teams to perform well together. But you know, what I realized in my work, I started out really focused on sales. Like I had been the director of marketing at a company. So I was getting calls from salespeople all day long. And you know, I was thinking, boy, I would be less irritated by these salespeople that are calling me if it didn't feel like they were just reading from a script, you know, if it felt like they were actually listening to me. That had been the impetus for this work. I could teach people, salespeople, improv skills, and that would help them so much to be better at sales. And it absolutely would. What I realized though, as I started coming in to companies and trying to address really specific things like this. Like people would think to call me for anything related to like sales, creativity type of stuff. Can you help us at the beginning of our meeting, like get our brainstorming juices flowing? We need help with collaboration or communication. And as I started having these conversations with leaders and HR team members and going into a few companies, you know, there at the beginning, I realized, is there ever a time that someone needs me when the problem isn't really about confrontation? It's not really about like, in some way, I am afraid to advocate for myself, or I let it fester so then I'm blowing up at people, or I just start writing people off. So then I'm not communicating well because I've decided what quote unquote kind of person this is, you know? And all of that is obviously about trust. So the more I was unpacking, like, well, what helps people feel trust? It's like seeing them as a whole person, you know, seeing them as more than Joe the bean counter or, you know, Bev the sales lady, or I'm just making names up at this point, but like seeing someone as a whole person, you know, and realizing that, as Maya Angelou says, we are more alike than we are unalike. Tapping into that human energy will help you to be braver. Like this is really about being a brave team member. And when you're brave, you know that your voice matters. And you also know that so does your scene partner. Scene partner is an improvism for whoever you're communicating with in that given moment.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. Why let's take the antagonistic view. That's mm-hmm. not being brave. That's just being an adult. That's showing up and having a good communication. What would you say to that person that it's, you know, it's not about bravery. It's just having a conversation.
I mean, if it doesn't feel like you're summoning some level of courage or vulnerability, then you're not saying what really needs to be said. Because if you don't feel like you're being vulnerable, then you're taking the upper hand. And so really what you're saying is this person needs to conform. If it doesn't feel vulnerable, then it feels like I have power. And if I have power, then we're not on the equal playing field.
Yeah. And so that's really curious because, you know, you probably see it all the time, but there's so many business leaders, so many managers, so many supervisors that they lead through title.
Mm-hmm.
It's my way or the highway, do it this way. And then they bemoan the fact that nobody is sharing with them ideas, that they are a paid audience, right? Because, you know, why isn't anybody come? I'm having to solve everybody's problem. My sense is because it's probably self-induced from the environment that you created.
Absolutely. And usually with the best of intentions. Like my brain is, if you could see like an fMRI of my brain right now, it probably looks like fireworks because there's so much here.
Yeah.
So let me start with one thing, which is that typically when people say, no one's giving me their ideas, this is often the same person who will say, okay, but no one's giving me feedback either. Like they're not telling, like I ask for feedback. They're not telling me what I can be doing differently. So like I often end up in this almost impasse with someone where they're like, but no one's, you know, they're not pitching the bold ideas. And I'm like, right. I have, you know, there's reasons for this, but then they're like, well, it's not me. Like we do our 360s, you know, we do our Myers-Briggs, all this stuff. Like no one's giving me feedback and I've done all this stuff. So the thing is, someone who is wanting that feedback, there's good intentions there. It was a good intention that put that idea in their head. Like I want to fix this problem. It's not good, you know, that no one's pitching their bold ideas. So usually my advice in that situation is ask more specific questions. Specifics are gold in improv, and they're also gold in these feedback conversations. So
can you give a couple of examples there? Because that's
absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. So for example, I had a client who was in a similar situation, the exact situation actually that we just described. And I said to him, I gave him like a template that was like, instead of saying like, how am I doing as a leader? Say, a month ago, we rolled out this change. And I noticed that there was some friction in your department on that. How could I have communicated differently? Did you feel that I was approachable? Did you feel that you could speak to me about what your ideas were? Could I have been on site more frequently? Did you feel like I had enough FaceTime with you? Like ask specific questions. And part of it is when you jog someone's memory about a specific thing, then they'll be like, oh yeah, I remember that. And then they can say something like, you know what? you were here, but it seemed like you were busy the whole time. So I didn't feel like I could get your attention. I felt like I was bothering you if I tried to get your attention. We are not a caricaturization of a boss. We are a human person. You know, I am a human person. And so even if with the best of intentions, I show up at your location and I'm trying to like be present, if I'm busy, nervous, upset, I don't seem approachable. You know, this is where I talk about listening hygiene. I don't talk about it as a skill because it's not the same as like, you know, in fifth grade or fourth grade or whenever kids learn about hygiene in gym class, you don't just get to be like, sweet, now I know about that and I'm clean now. Like it takes proactive effort every day or you're going to stink. And it won't be because you don't know enough about it.
Like, I need to tell my 10-year-old son this. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's like, and there's also not something wrong with you. So like, I can't even tell you how frequently people tell me I come on site and they're like, so-and-so is a narcissist. So-and-so, like people are like ready to diagnose folks left and right. Like they're so ready to tell me who's the problem, you know? And it's like, it may not be that there's something, you know, quote unquote wrong with this person. It could be that we need to brush up on our listening hygiene, you know? Because if you're booking your meetings back to back to back to back, then people feel like there's this time scarcity anxiety.
Yeah,
are you getting what I'm saying?
Yeah, because there's a lot to unpack there. I was expecting this to be a little bit lighter and more fun, but I really like where you're going because I didn't realize how voluminous this was going to be. Okay, so let's talk about listening hygiene. Let's define and give a couple of examples there. And then what I'd really like to do is put some application to this because there's application from a prospecting marketing perspective. There is from a sales perspective, from a leadership perspective, not only this customer service or customer success sales side. And that's the beauty about this, right? So for the listeners, if you learn these skills, they're ubiquitous across every facet of life.
Yes.
So let's really go back to this listening hygiene. What is listening hygiene? Can you give us a couple tangible examples, please?
Yeah. So listening hygiene is about how consistently you deliver at the caliber of your intentions, which is a very wordy sentence. But what that means is that listening hygiene is about all of those active listening skills that probably you and every person that watches this is like, oh, great. Yeah. Open body language. You know, I'm asking good questions. I'm showing with my nonverbal communication that I'm listening, you know, like people know from however many trainings they've been to, like what the behaviors are. But at some point it's almost like your body can like muscle memory, learn those skills, right? Those skills are like driving a stick shift or playing an instrument. At some point, your body just knows how to imitate that. Your body can just do that without you being checked in. Listening hygiene is about your present focus. It's about being in this moment, really present, not distracted. It's like the advice that I give my clients is to just notice, like if they're being really honest, the times that their wife wants to smack them upside the head and be like, you're still not listening. Like what causes good people to do that? Like it's
marriage.
Right. Well, but it's like, so first of all, so I'm glad you said that to me. So marriage, when people say that, what they really mean is I start taking that person for granted. I start taking for granted the honor of their attention. I start taking for granted the privilege of sitting across from the table with this person and hearing their perspective on life. I'm forgetting the gold mine that is across from me of potential for us to build something beautiful together in this moment. So part of it is like this improv skill. I call them the core five. I promise I won't get all into it because I know you didn't ask me for like a full-on webinar, but it's-
We'll take it. What's the core five?
Yeah. So the core five, so we talk about honoring your scene partner.
Okay. I was just going to try to translate. So honoring your scene partner would be, you know, mutual respect, active listening, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Honoring your scene partner to me very specifically means remembering who this person is, remembering who they are to you as a valuable contributor, a valuable contributor. It's about... I started not with the first one, so now I'm out of order in my brain. But so choosing curiosity over judgment is one of them. listening beyond your comfort zone, present focus, as I've said a few times, and then gift orientation. So gift orientation means that no matter what pops up, an improviser is like, that's okay. I receive this as a gift. This is not a deal breaker. This doesn't ruin it. This is a gift. There is something here for me. And so especially critical when it comes to confrontation, because folks get worried. Like, I've done a whole variety of different applications of this concept when I'm working with leaders and teams, depending on what the need is. I'm talking like sexual harassment, diversity and inclusion, brainstorming, like overcoming like a new owner, you know, a new leader in a department. And there's just stuff that comes up, you know? So when we have gift orientation, no matter what somebody says, we realize, ooh, that painful thing, that difficult thing I just heard, that is pointing us in the direction of my next question. You know, it is giving me clarity on what needs to happen next. So if we don't panic and we don't feel like, now it's ruined, because if we think that's what will happen when we hear something difficult during confrontation, we're likely to start avoiding it. We're likely to start avoiding saying certain things, asking certain questions that desperately need to be said and asked, if we're worried that the answer or that kind of person would break it and would put us in a situation where now there's no coming back from here.
Now, I want to go back to one other piece. You said listening beyond your comfort zone. Is that what you said?
Yes.
What in the world is that?
So I am a Mennonite, and I have one foot, like every time I perform, I've got one foot in the comedian canoe and one foot in the Mennonite canoe. And there's just
a big divide.
If you drew a Venn diagram of things that happen at Mennonite church and things that happen in a dive bar during a comedy set, there's just no overlap. You just have two circles.
You're like one step away from Amish, for goodness sakes.
Yeah. So like for me, listening beyond my comfort zone has meant I am strong enough to be uncomfortable. Uncomfortable is not the same thing as unsafe. And if I keep listening, I could talk about this for an hour. This alone, I could talk about for an hour.
Yeah.
This is about resilience. Listening beyond your comfort zone is about resilience. It's about knowing that when somebody says something and then you're like, that's the kind of person I'm dealing with. Or, maybe this was not the right person to hire. Or maybe I'm not the right fit here. The narrative you check into most readily when you're uncomfortable, it's about me or it's about them. Listening beyond your comfort zone means, no. I'm not going to do that. Instead, I'm going to stay present with this person and I'm going to keep listening. I'm going to actively choose to be resilient. I'm going to choose to recover from whatever just now happened because I trust that I am enough and I trust that this person is enough. I trust that they are both more than whatever just now happened. It might be true that something painful or unprofessional or whatever just happened. But when we're resilient beyond that, then we can get to wherever we need to get to. And that doesn't mean that we never part ways. It just means that we don't part ways prematurely.
Okay, so let's try to bring some application to this or tactics to this. So on the listening beyond your comfort zone or listening, how do you say that again, please?
Yeah, listening beyond your comfort zone.
So listening beyond your comfort zone. So what you said here is we have to have such self-confidence that no matter what they say, we're not going to take it personally. I had a guy by the name of Lem Pencher and Costa. He and I butted heads a lot. I'll have to send this to him whenever we're done. But he went through some rough times. And you talk about resilience. But one thing that I learned from him, which fundamentally has changed my life, is take nothing personally.
Mm-hmm.
And for you not to take something personally, you have to have such an inner strength that I'm okay no matter what anybody else does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's having that inner strength, that inner confidence that I'm not going to take it personally, but then also go that to your curiosity statement. If it hurts, go, inner voice go, well, that's interesting. I would not have thought that, right? If we take that, that's interesting to drive intentionally that curiosity.
Absolutely.
We can stave off that emotional involvement, because if we get emotionally involved, I think that the place, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but it seems like the place where listening breaks down is as you're talking, I'm like, right. If you can see me on the video, I'm just itching to jump in, mm-hmm. and you say something and I'm rebutting you in my mind instead of taking it in and then thinking of a way to respond.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So is that kind of all wrapped into that listening beyond your comfort zone?
And you're speaking beautifully to the way that these core five dovetail into each other. You know, and this is the reason why I love using improv to teach these things so well, because it's one thing to hear me say this and to be like, ooh, yeah, I can see how that would absolutely be helpful. But it's another thing then when we're in person someday in a post-pandemic world,
right.
And you hear these skills and then it's like, we're going to practice some improv games together. You should see the looks on people's faces and they're just like, I don't want to do that. But I'm Pam from HR. I'm not Tina Fey. Why is she here? Why is she making me do this? You know,
yeah. And I'm the CFO.
Right. So there's this like, how dare she, you know, part of it. And I try to encourage people not to drop that bomb as a surprise, but sometimes people feel like that's the only way, you know, that it'll happen. I encourage people not to surprise their staff with that. But my point is, regardless, even if they know it's coming, there's this fear. I am such an empath that sometimes I start getting fearful as well, because I feel their energy like, oh my gosh, what if I do something foolish? What if I embarrass myself? Just this heavy, heavy reluctance. And then to watch people overcome that together and realize like, oh, this is okay. This is what it feels like to say something out loud in front of the group. For some people, that is a powerful milestone. You know,
yeah.
For other people, it's noticing when you're not needed on stage. You know, for other people, it's noticing how to hang back a little bit. But like, Brian, I can't even tell you, to watch people navigate that in real life, like noticing when to hang back, noticing when to let somebody else shine, feeling what it feels like to get out there and put your idea out there in this improv game and be like, oh, that didn't land how I thought it would, and then have somebody else come out and add their idea on top of it, and then it becomes the funniest freaking thing that's ever happened.
Yeah.
And people are like doubled over crying with laughter, and then you're like, that's what it feels like when someone has your back. That's what sacrificial support looks like. Instead of judging your idea that didn't go how you thought it would, I'm not sitting over here like, that's embarrassing for them, good thing that wasn't me. I jump out there because I'm remembering to honor my scene partner. I'm remembering to choose curiosity instead of judgment. I'm remembering to listen beyond my comfort zone. You see what I'm saying? Like, these skills get put into practice so immediately. And then at the end, it's like this incredible moment of asking, like, what well of resilience did you tap into in order to decide you were going to commit to this, in order to decide you were going to get out there and do this? That's the same stuff that you're going to tap into when you start noticing like, uh-oh, I see confrontation brewing in this meeting. I see this happening. And I could sit back and be like, ooh, good thing I'm not the one on the chopping block. Or I could remember, that's my scene partner. What an honor I have to be in the room with this person. What an honor I have to be the recipient of their passionate creative input.
Yeah.
You know, it changes everything about the way we treat each other in those vulnerable moments.
Yeah, you were saying something and I didn't jot down the note that I had, so I'm quickly trying to go back and remember the point that I had, but it was something along the lines towards the middle of that you're talking about, and you touched on it a little bit. Those that don't speak up, they, you know, we as leaders, if we can't pull that out of them and get their input, we lose so much. And those that are constantly shining, you know, they just love to hear themselves speak. We get more than enough of them and we need to quiet them down. And so if we can have this community of conversation, I guess is the way to say it, we'll get greater feedback from all sides and we'll get greater quality out of it. So yeah. It's really knowing when to shine, when to shut up kind of thing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Humility and courage, humility and courage. And like, this is the deal, that improv is such a beautiful way to help people practice that skill, because it doesn't feel sharp. It feels sharp to tell someone, we're hearing too much from you. You don't want to dim the people that are passionate, that are contributing. You don't want to take the wind out of their sails, but you do want to make sure that they're giving everybody room to shine. And the people that are maybe reluctant to speak up, boy, I have learned from watching other improv coaches, because for the longest time, I just loved improv and I wasn't teaching it in this way. I just loved it. And I started this company by accident because I never shut up about how great it was. They started asking me to come to their offices. But I watched other improv leaders, meaning like owners of theaters or like people who had been doing it forever, come into non-comedian settings to try to teach it, and then call shy people out and be like, you need to participate. And then watch these people like wilt in front of them. It's yeah. like, there is an art to how you do this. And you don't want to make your people that struggle to speak up, you don't want to shame them. So there is a way, there is a way to do it. And this, I feel like this system that I've created does a good job of helping people tap into their courage and helping them tap into their humility at the right moments.
Well, and something you said reminded me of what I was thinking of is, you know, I try to drive into my kids, and we have like 8 million kids. If you're thinking of yourself, you're not doing things right. So if I'm scared, I'm thinking of myself, what others would think of me. If I'm thinking of myself, I'm narcissistic because I'm trying to just get everybody to think like me. Whereas if we can have that humility and that active listening, that curiosity, respecting of others, that really comes from thinking of others. Because mm-hmm. as soon as you're thinking of yourself, I'm not listening. I'm not watching you. I'm not doing anything that I need to do to have a good conversation. So the sooner that we can look and focus in on that other person, this stuff accidentally starts to happen on a natural basis. So if we can be intentional about focusing on the other person and then leverage in some of these tactics of improv, and then that's going to give us that human relationship skills Absolutely. To be able to do this. I mean, that's kind of at the core of all of this. Is that on the right track?
Yes, you're absolutely right. And this is the reason why servant leadership is such a great guide for this. And so like earlier you were talking about how often leaders and managers tend to lead by title, is I think what you said. And, right. and use power to be like, do what I want you to do or you're going to get fired. And they don't maybe say those words necessarily, but the entire attitude, the entire vibe everyone is receiving is, don't tell me what you think. Tell me that I'm right. Tell me that I'm right. You know, like do what I'm asking you to do. And I call that collaboration theater. Like we're pretending because I broke out a whiteboard and some post-its, but pretty much I know what needs to happen right now. This is what's going to happen. Just do it. You know? Right. And so like the opposite of that, you know, is servant leadership. And there's a couple books I could recommend on that. I saw on your prompts that, one of the things was, you know, what guides and things do you recommend? And, you know, I of course have resources as well. I have created quite a lot of free content on my YouTube channel, but there's two books, The Servant by James C. Hunter and The Serving Leader by Ken Jennings and John Stalwart, that really speak to what you just said. Yeah. And it's everything that I believe in and teach, but it's also just a framework that is proven to help keep well-intentioned leaders from behaving in this title first, it's my way or the highway, enthusiasm murdering way of leading a company.
So conversation and feedback isn't, hey, tell me all the great things that I've done. That's not the feedback that we should be given.
No, okay. That's not the method that I recommend.
All right. Well, okay. So I think that's It's just a ton of foundation. So let's take the specific of what the topic is here. How do we take that from a customer success and mm-hmm. sales perspective, right? Because when we're on sales, we're trying to do everything to win the day, right? And there's a lot of pressure here, right? So taking that, how do we do that, one, customer facing, but then two, so we don't overpromise and crush the customer success team. So two different sides, one customer facing, or I guess external customer, and then internal customer. So how do we take all of this and put it in that context, please?
Yeah, so I've seen people handle this in a variety of ways. The foundation answer, like to pull up from what we've covered so far, is it starts with honoring your scene partner and that frequent communication also, you know, because if you've got, like, I've worked at companies before where the sales team has their own department and it's completely separate from everybody else. There's very little relationship between the two departments. And there's very little, you know, like incidental conversation or ability to just quickly be like, hey, thank you, customer, for asking that question. Let me put you on hold for one quick second. Joe, does this seem like a feasible thing? Like, there's not any ability for that because it's like worlds apart, you know? So part of it, I think, is physical proximity. I also had the pleasure of working with a company where they had teams between sales and customer facing. And so it's like they sell products or do like new company initiatives, sort of like in pods, where you have like someone from sales, a couple people from development, a couple people that are doing customer support working together. That way there's just so much more trust. There's so much more, and there's also so much more understanding of what goes into it. And so part of it is like when we can cross-educate, you know, so that sales has a little bit more understanding of what goes into this from a development perspective. But the other part of it is that we are each other's yin and yang, you know, like, just like I was saying, maybe the last time we talked, sales, some of the things I have loved a lot about some of the salespeople in my life is their innovative sky is the limit spirit and their genuine belief in the capability of their developers to just build the moon, you know?
That's because we don't know how hard it is.
Sure. And so like part of it is this gift orientation, you know, like let's not imbue our scene partners with the worst possible characteristics. Like I know what it feels like having worked in sales and having worked in customer facing roles to just make the worst assumptions about like this person's only like they're just chasing a commission. And it's like, why think that? Why choose that story instead of the story that says this person is an optimist that believes we are capable of so much. And this person is, you know, giving me the gift of hearing what the market is asking for right now. You know, like that, those are really important pieces of information. I am offering, you know, an understanding of like what technical capabilities are right now. You know, I am offering the perspective of like what all is on the table and, you know, like what our technical bandwidth is to do new things. And so that's valuable as well, but we don't need to think the worst possible thing about each other. So, but just like you said earlier, that comes down to trust.
And yeah. Yeah, I was just going to say that there's a lot of cognitive bias that comes into that, because if I think you're all about commission, then I'm not going to give you the benefit of the doubt. I'm not going to trust you, and I'm going to think the worst of you. And now I have these lenses on that's your commission breath, right? Or you're a killjoy, the other side, or whatever negative stereotype that we throw out there. And that ruins the whole entire, to keep with the idea here, the scene, if you will, from doing this, whether from the customer external or internal. So that, absolutely.
I have seen and personally heard, and to be perfectly honest, participated in the name calling and the distrust across this divide, you know, the development, the people that are in charge of fulfilling whatever has been sold, they're the sticks in the mud. You know, the people that are selling, they're the commission chasers. You know, they're not tied down to reality at all. And the most logistical answer to solving this problem truly is give people more opportunities to have relationships with each other. Give them more opportunities to communicate, put them in closer proximity, like allow them to collaborate in so many areas so that they see each other as a whole person and not just a job title, but they also understand more about what each other's heart, work, workload, responsibilities, like help them understand each other better, you know?
Yeah.
And well, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, because right now you can't get into proximity. So it doesn't necessarily need to be proximity of space, but proximity of communication. Like you said, these pods, getting to understand one another. And the curious thing is, I've been taking notes down here. Whenever you talked about the trust, there's transparency. We have an episode coming up in a couple weeks from now, a guy by the name of Todd Capulli, and he talks about transparency in oh, forgive me, Todd. I can't remember the name of your book. I feel like such a jerk, but it's a great book. Read it. I've got it on my Audible right now. But having that courage to speak trust, having the courage to be transparent. And whenever we don't think that we have that capability, say, hey, listen, let me just be upfront with you. I don't think we can do that. Is that going to be a showstopper? Yeah, we really need that. Well, now I can go back to my customer success or my development team and say, hey, this is a showstopper. If we didn't do this, this is where we are. Can we do this, or do we need to offload this? Because here's the deal. A lot of this, especially, so you were talking about technology on the SaaS model, right? Software as a service, that renewal is everything. That's where the money is made. That's how your company is profitable. And if we don't say no, we should never have won that deal to begin with. Not only are we not going to get the renewal, but now the reputation is going to get tarnished. And whenever we do have the capability, now they're not going to listen to us because we already lied to them. So there's so much that at stake here by doing what you said, of having the courage to speak out in humility with curiosity, having this presence and mindfulness and collaboration with the whole entire team. So there's a perfect alignment here.
Absolutely. And even that, I think we opened up talking about the why, understanding the why of your company, you know? And so you should be able to deliver on what your why is. It's the shiny objects that seem tangential, that are close, but not exactly why you're here. And, you know, that is something that I have struggled with a lot. That's maybe been the number one thing that I've struggled with as a business owner, is that my heart is in a lot of places, and improv, these things that we're talking about apply to so many different things. And so, boy, is it difficult for me to stay focused on, like, this is what I care about. This is the way I do good in the world, is by helping people create cultures that honor everyone. You know, this is my way. I teach people how to be peace building conspirators at work. I teach them at work the skills that they need to literally build a beautiful, peaceful world in every area of their life. This is how I do good. So it's easy, though, to get distracted with, like, you know, oh, well, you know what? I am a fast-adopt mom. And there's this whole group of fast-adopt moms that are trying to figure out how to start businesses. Maybe I should do an online class for them. No, that's a great idea. Maybe 10 years from now.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Don't get distracted with that right now. Do you think I built out that program? Yes. Was it a huge failure because I didn't have the bandwidth to do it right? Yes. You have to focus on, like as a, when you're a small business owner, you're sales and fulfillment, you know, so, like, you have this war within yourself and it's so critical. Like, what is your why? Don't get distracted selling extra stuff because you can justify it in your brain in some way. Like, focus. Yeah. It is safe to keep it simple. It is safe to say no. It is safe to focus, because that is how you can deliver the most value.
Yeah. Gino Wickman has a good line. You know, he wrote the book Traction, and he says, less people die of starvation than they do of indigestion, because we get enamored with the shiny thing and we get off on these tangents instead of staying on our why and our purpose and getting the foundational down. So that's really sound advice. Okay. So good stuff. Hopefully, everyone got some good tactical, practical advice here, how we can take all of this that we've talked about. But really, if you want to boil it down to the most simplistic, have good conversations, be transparent, respect the other person with whom you're speaking, actively listening, be creative and problem solving together, because we can problem solve together a lot easier than in an antagonistic, kind of world in which we're unfortunately living right now. So really, really good stuff. All right. So as we're winding down here, oh my gosh, I it's funny. These things, these podcasts are fairly long. So hopefully you as the listening audience are getting as much out of this as I've been. Time always just flies so quickly. Give us real quick, I think you just did, the biggest business challenge that you've seen, has it been that shiny object, chasing other things, or what's been
for me? That's been my biggest challenge, is the need to stay focused, especially as a small business owner. You cost yourself time and money by getting distracted. And so staying laser focused on your why, not letting, like, people will often reach out to me like, hey, I could really use some coaching for public speaking. I'm trying to do more online videos like you do. Could you, help me with this thing? And I'm like so tempted to do it, because improv absolutely does help with that. But it's like, that's not why I'm here. That's not me doing my work. That's a distraction, So yeah, having to stay focused on, this is why I'm here. I got to stay on this path.
Have you figured out any tactics or tricks, hacks for us?
For how to do that? So one thing that I do is I have a bunch of whiteboards. I'm big into whiteboarding, but my why, the thing that I am staying focused on, I write with a Sharpie on the whiteboard, so that even as I am dry erasing other stuff and like figuring out like, what is my week this week? I've got the why, the anchoring thing that is like my true north, is in Sharpie, so I don't get distracted.
Nice. I like the tie into the true north.
I've also invested in business coaching. I mean, that's another thing. Like, don't be afraid to invest in getting the help that you need to get your head on straight. That's been one thing that I've done.
It's a curious point, right? Because we're in the weeds, and for whatever reason, we can't see it. And somebody else sees it plain as day, is like, did you see this? Oh, no. All right. So yeah, absolutely. That's a really good advice there. Okay. Now, how about a best business hack for talent, sales, or scale? I mean, have any suggestion of how we can use this, your expertise, whether it's for talent, selling, or scaling the business?
Yeah. So I think mine mainly has to do with scale. And so it's like right in the tagline of my business, forward together. Don't let yourself think that if you're a slightly smaller business right now, for example, it's easy to think, I'm too small to worry about culture right now. No, you're not. Now is the perfect time to be thinking about, what kind of leader do I want to be? Maybe I only have 5, 10, 20 employees right now. But if you have aspirations to really scale, now is the time to think about, what kind of culture do we want to have? What kind of leader do I want to be? Because it's a lot easier to pivot right now. If you need to course correct now, it's going to be a lot easier to do that than when you're the size of, the VA where I worked before, and like the most minuscule change, it goes through like 20, tiers of leadership to do one small thing. And, I know that's like a really drastic example, but the point remains, you're agile now. Now is a great time to think about culture and who you want to be. Especially because when you're very clear about your culture expectations, that is how you will hold yourself and others accountable. Having those very clear tent poles laid out right now.
Yeah. And I think that's sound advice, because if you don't lay out a culture, you're going to get the wrong people on your team. Mm-hmm. And you'll fail nevertheless. So culture is critical from the get-go. So I think that's really sage advice. So I like that. How about resources? Any books that you would recommend, podcasts, guides, anything that you'd suggest? Oh,
so many books I would recommend. The books I mentioned two books earlier, The Servant by James C. Hunter and The Serving Leader by Ken Jennings and John Stalwart. I almost switched their first and last names. So those are two great books if you're interested in servant leadership. Dare to Lead by Brené Brown, my future friend. Cannot preach enough. I think I own all of her books. I love her very much, and she just gives fantastic advice. But also, I really recommend, if this conversation is resonating with people and you're like, great, I have these foundations, this is really important to me, but I really want more tactical advice on the accountability part. Like, what do I do if I'm super on board, but my co-founder isn't? or there's one person at my company that, like that person that I was telling you about before, that everyone's always like, it's Todd's fault, you know, he knows this or whatever.
Todd.
So all these people, fractious employees or difficult people to coach. I have a free webinar and beyondimprov.com/encouragingchange that offers some of these very tactical, evidence-based things that I was sharing that my background is in, like how to help people make lasting changes. When we're really getting into behavior modification coaching and you're trying to figure out how to do that, it's a free webinar and beyondimprov.com/encouragingchange. And you can get some very tactical advice about how to handle those coaching conversations.
Cool. And is that on demand or?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Nice. For a second, I was like thinking about HBO and I was like, no, but if you know someone at HBO, like I'm real happy to put something up there.
There you got it. All right. Perfect. All right. So what's the future hold? I mean, with all this craziness going on, what are you seeing from the circles that you're talking to? What's going to come down the pike that if we're not expecting is going to bite us right in the backside?
I mean, if you're not expecting what I'm about to say by now, you're probably already going to get bit. But I think what the future holds is brave leaders. I think that what the future holds is brave HR teams, brave team members. And what that means is like the conversations that feel scariest to have right now about racial justice in particular, about gender equality, about like these conversations that feel like, I just want it to be fixed. In my heart, I'm the kind of person that's like, yeah, I don't want that stuff to be happening. So I'm not a part of the problem, right? I think what's going to happen in the future is that hiding behind general niceness is not going to be enough. It never has been enough. But I think what's going to happen is that the leaders that are most reluctant to really be brave and talk about this stuff, even if, especially if you've got listeners that are working at smallish companies that are like mostly or all white people or mostly or all white dudes, and they're like, I don't know what to do about it. Those companies are going to fail. Like, I do not believe that the future holds all white, small, like entrepreneurial groups, like the ones that I was coming through out of startup weekend when back in my tech startup days. I don't think that that's how it's going to work anymore. I think consumers are a lot more conscious about working with customers that are embracing these incredibly important ideas. But I also think that it's going to get harder and harder the longer companies wait to course correct, the longer companies wait to get brave and have these conversations and do better, the harder it's going to be for someone to come in at the company and be like, and be willing to take that risk. Like as a woman, I know that it would be really difficult for me if in 5 years, a company is like, can you come in and help us have this conversation? I'm gonna be like, why are we having this conversation right now? Like, why did it take you so long to get brave? So I think that right now I think that's where the future is headed.
Yeah. Right. So courage and bravery. And I also think humility on the listening side too, because it seems like everyone's talking over each other. So I'd agree with that wholeheartedly. All right. So Andrea, who should reach out to you? How should they do it? And why should they reach out to you?
Yeah. So the who would be leaders or HR. Like if you're not the owner of the company, but you're the leader of the HR team, those are usually the best folks to have a conversation with me. And if you're in a situation where you're desperate for continuity, like your heart is there, your leadership team is already there. But you're like, we are not consistent across all departments. We've got departments that are consistently reporting these problems of culture. People are not respectful. They're not upholding our culture vision, our brand promise. We've got people that are not consistently delivering as leaders, and we're not really sure what to do about it. That is where I live all day. And so if you've got that type of a problem, and you are desperate to get some continuity in your culture, please reach out to me. That is what I love to help caring, empathetic leaders, solve. And the how of reaching out to me, you can reach out to me through my website or directly email me is fine. I can provide you my contact information. But also that webinar that I offered, that free webinar, andbeyondimprov.com/encouragingchange. That's a great place to get started and kind of, you know, get a sense of if this feels like a good fit to you. And then there's a contact form on that page as well if you want to reach out. I'm really big into like giving you something that's valuable right at the beginning to see if that feels like a good fit. And then also make sure that we hit the ground running in our work together.
Nice. Give to get. Love it. Well, hey, I really appreciate it, Andrea. This has been a lot of fun, and I was not expecting it to be this jam-packed with good content. So I thought it was going to be a lot of fun, but this is a lot of fun and a ton of good context. So that's
people awesome. Expect improv to be mostly fart jokes, and they're like pleasantly surprised when it's like, whoa, there's real substance here.
Yeah, right. So perfect. Well, I'll take the and we'll get running here. So I can't thank you enough. Hey, this is Brian Whittington with this episode of the Talent, Sales, and Scale Show. Be empathetic. Start listening. Oh my gosh, get after it. Have some fun already. Hey, thanks everyone. See ya.